From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, the 33rd installment in our ongoing conversation with Professor Luciana Bone about the history of the USSR. Luciana, pleasure to have you with us again.
Thank you, Dan. Pleasure to be here.
So, now we go to this critical period, the 30s, the pre-war period, before the German invasion of the USSR. We have Trotsky still sniping at the Soviet government, even up to Operation Barbarossa, pretty much. And Stalin laying out an analysis of what's going on in the world, what Trotsky represents with respect to the things going on in the world, and what the USSR has to do. So let's dive into some of that.
Yeah, I thought we would talk about fascism, imperialism, and war in the 1930s. And let's see, and to ask, so what was Trotsky's view? What was Trotsky's view, and what was Stalin's view about how to deal with the situation, the leading to war, which looked like, you know, it was going to happen.
Right.
Now, I had a little introduction, and so just to remind people, listeners, what exactly was the alignment of forces in the 1930s in Europe. So in the 1930s, most European countries, with the exception of the Soviet Union, had either fascist governments, from Spain to Italy to Austria to Poland,
right,
or fascist political forces ready to go over as soon as the Germans either invaded or were near invasion, places such as Romania,
right,
Hungary.
Right. Right.
Now, of the big powers, only France and England maintain a political system of what we call classic liberal democracy, by which, of course, I mean parliamentarian systems in partnership with capitalism.
And then places like France, of course, you had, you know, waiting in the immediate wings, people like Pétain, who, you know, was essentially a fascist. They had,
yeah,
some power already and were kind of gathering
yes,
forces on the ground. And the UK,
exactly,
as well, by the way. Chamberlain is not exactly, Churchill, rather, is not exactly someone that you would say represented liberal democracy, even though he's glued on as a face of it in public discourse in the post-war,
yes,
period. He was a hard-nosed imperialist, and
yes,
I would say, you know, semi-fascist,
yes,
too.
So really, yeah, so the map of Europe before the invasion was pretty much fascist or pro-fascist.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's right.
So these two liberal, so-called liberal democracy, were, of course, as you pointed out, imperialist. Pointed out for England, they had an empire and they had subject colonies.
Right, and France.
So you
too
had,
yep,
three apparently different systems:
right,
fascism, imperialist, liberal democracy, right, and socialism.
Right.
So should Hitler begin a war, how should the other two systems react? Especially the Soviet Union and the communist parties throughout Europe. So Trotsky had one view and Stalin had another. So to be a Trotskyist in the 1930s was to have this position, neither with the European democracies nor with the Soviet Union. What he recommended was world revolution, permanent revolution, led by the world proletariat. Later on, we will elucidate this term, finally. So why should we, Trotskyists, not side with the democracies? Because they were imperialist, and they were a bigger enemy of the proletariat revolution than fascism. Now, that
right,
is true, of course.
Right.
In the long run, imperialism was the biggest obstacle to the development of socialism, and, you know, that was just common knowledge among theoretical communists, Marxist-Leninists. Yes, it was true. Imperialism was a bigger threat to potential social revolutions, to social revolution. But fascism was the immediate threat. So Trotsky proposed that this threat provided the opportunity for revolutionary uprising to defeat imperialism. The same things he had said in Spain.
Right.
It was disastrous.
Right.
Revolution within a fascist attack. So, that was one. Two, so why shouldn't we Trotskyists side with the Soviet Union? Because Trotsky says, in essence, Stalinism was fascism.
Right. This is the big ideological kernel of this, by the way.
Yes. Yes, we will. We have a lot to talk about that. Now, the Soviet bureaucracy, he claimed, has adopted the political methods of fascism. Political methods of fascism mean imprisonment, torture. We can see him referring to what the Western myth is, that the purges of the 1930s, 35, 36, the trials and all that, were not, in fact, an action against treasonous activities, and was, in fact, a civil war, a new civil war, a political civil war within the Soviet Union. I'm interpreting here.
Understood.
The Soviet Union was a police state. It's what we identify with fascism, a police state. So, but what he's referring to is his own interpretation in his own interest, that what was really tried in Moscow and what was punished was treason, was a plot to overthrow the government of the Soviet Union.
Right.
And we haven't talked about that.
That's right. There's another aspect to it, too, which, you know.
Yeah?
We saw this kind of, political confusion deliberately floated during the 80s, during the Reagan administration, which was, a distinction even. First, a lumping of totalitarian, quote-unquote, governments and authoritarian, quote-unquote, governments, where they allege the same behavior to both camps, but based on, in reality, based on the economic relations, because it's interesting, the imperialists are more Marxist in their analysis of the world than many people that walk around calling themselves Marxists, in that, to them, the distinctive feature here was economic power. If the bourgeoisie had control of the organs of the state, and the state was acting in defense of or in prosecution of the rights of the bourgeoisie to the economic life of a society, then the tactics or the methods that are used, brutal or not, are fine. And if it's not the bourgeoisie, but rather the proletariat or others, the poor, in essence, on whose behalf the government is acting, that's totalitarian and that is no-go. So their distinction is the economic relations, and that's how they decide what's good and what's not. And so you start with this, going back in the 30s, this slander that, because first of all, the idea to a Marxist that the political tactics of something are what determines rather than economic relations, the nature of, even if you had the same behaviors by the government in both places, on whose behalf is the government acting? And in the Soviet Union, it's on behalf of a socialist economy that's being constructed by and for and of the workers. And it's an entirely different situation, for example, Krupp Steel and others, and, go across Europe.
Yeah, exactly. The dictatorship, that's why it's a dictatorship. It's called the dictatorship of the proletariat,
right,
as opposed to the dictatorship of the bourgeoisie. In the dictatorship of the bourgeoisie, the economic power determines the political features of the state. Why do they call it a dictatorship of the proletariat?
Well, it's because it's prosecuting the interests of the class as a primary function, regardless of
the
niceties.
It's a neutral term, really.
Exactly, that's right.
It's kind of classical Roman, you know.
Right, that's right.
A dictator was allowed in Rome.
Right. Step in and organize us to fix this problem, and then step out. That's basically what a dictator was in Rome.
That's right. That's right. So, and in both cases, the economic power dictated the structure of the state, the political.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know if the word is correct to say dictated, but
a government or an administration or whatever. I mean, you can use those words also. In other words, an operation of the commanding levers of society of this class or that class.
That's right. It was really Trotsky that propagandized, that introduced in the term totalitarian, which then Hannah Arendt picked up in her book Totalitarianism, and which is argued to be, I think, very reasonably by philosophers to be a nonsense term. Then, you know, but that too we haven't quite gone into yet. So Trotsky's claim was that the Trotskyists, communists, real communists, should not side with the Soviet Union because it had this fascist feature. It was a totalitarian dictatorship, a totalitarian regime. And he said the Soviet Union is at once a fascist country and a partner of imperialism. Might as well call the USSR a fascist imperialist lackey of the Western democracy. And he does.
Yep.
And the fault is all with the Soviet bureaucracy, which is his name for the ruling, for the government of the Soviet Union. It's his name for the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. Did you want to say something?
No. Go ahead. I'm following just fine.
Okay. He said this Soviet bureaucracy, the Communist Party, they are a caste, an oligarchy. They are the cause of the degeneration of the first worker state. That's the degeneration of the worker state. That's for the benefit of the left, the future left, that we'll call it. No, we can't be communist in the Soviet manner, because that was the degeneration of the first worker state. They are a new exploitative class. The present regime in the USSR is a special system of class exploitation. So, the third reason he says that the Soviet Union, that we should avoid, that we shouldn't be with the Soviet Union, Trotskyists, because Stalin would side with Britain to curry favor among the European democracy. And continuing his quote, Stalin says to Washington, London, and Paris, recognize me, Stalin, as an equal partner. So he's craving recognition. Stalin is craving recognition from the imperialists.
According to Trotsky. This is according to Trotsky, to keep that in mind, folks.
According to Trotsky, Stalin says to Washington, London, and Paris, he says, quote, recognize me. Stalin never said that. This is him
That's right.
Trotsky imagining Stalin speaking, speaking for Stalin. Recognize me as an equal partner, and I will help you put down the revolutionary movement in the colonies and semi-colonies. For this, I have in my service hundreds of agents. Stalinism has become the leprosy of the liberating movement. Now, let's just pause a minute. He says, I will help you put down the revolutionary movement. He is talking about the man who penned a very important Marxist book called On Nationalities in 1913. Lenin set him to write a landmark, a book on nationalities, because Lenin realized that there would be, if the revolution happened, there was the problem of the people in beyond the Urals and in the Caucasus who were colonies within the Tsarist Empire.
Right.
So it was decided, of course, that if the revolution happened, the first decree would be peace, and the second decree would be equality, and including the right to secede to all the what we now call minorities, and they very nicely called nationalities, of the former empire. He's talking about the man and the party that almost immediately in 1923 went to help the colonial insurrection in China.
Right.
Right. This depicting this party as opposed to colonial insurrections when that is,
European history and I would have to say that Trotsky's perspective also, betrays this prejudice. It ignores what happened in Asia. You know, it's bewildering. Inscrutable. All these stupid words that they've used. But, you could have people, your average, I would say not average, but, maybe a lot of people, college students, et cetera, describe in general, if in accurate terms, the evolution of political thought in Western Europe and also of the societies there, some of them with some Marxist terminology, if not concepts. But if you ask them to discuss those things about Asia, for example, the parallels between what happened in Russia, Soviet Union, and China, the parallels between the wars, attacks by fascism against each of them, the history that was going on and developing in each place, they don't know a damn thing about Asia. And so Stalin going to China, for example, at this point in time, and every place in between, you see the fruits of that in the 1940s, and you have to remember while he was doing that, Mao Zedong was walking, marching, so to speak, all over China, and even Chiang Kai-shek was, in essence, compared to people in the United States, he was a communist practically. I mean, he was certainly a nationalist, and at that time it was something.
He was a nationalist. He eventually sold out.
Yes, and he did.
The Taiwan.
Yes, he ended up being. Yes. He ended up being, the guy who set up the all of China on a city block. But in essence, that war was going on. He was an anti-fascist, also. That's the point. If you want to talk about whatever Churchill or any of these other characters in Europe were against the Germans, Chiang Kai-shek against the Japanese was, a mountain of a man.
Well,
and then there's Mao.
Two united, yes.
And then there's Mao. Well, Stalin, in this inconsequential trip where he won't learn anything about the provinces, is in the thick of it with Mao and Chiang Kai-shek, just as a part of his implementing the nationality strategy of the USSR that he would eventually run.
Exactly. Now, you've just pointed out a very important distinction in Marxism, let's call it communism, whatever you want to call it. Eastern Marxism versus Western Marxism. Did the unions or the Communist Party in France organize general strikes, all kinds of stoppages, disturbances, when the Algerian War broke out, the Algerian War for Independence in 1954, for example.
Right. Or the Vietnamese War for Independence in 1954.
And that's right. Where was the Western, even communist parties, when the Third World struggles for independence started? Nowhere.
Right. Well, who were their delegates to Bandung, for example? We don't know.
Yes,
right, exactly.
That's right. There was not a single presence from the West, was there?
Right. That's right. I mean, not really. Not of note,
really,
for sure.
This is what killed. This is so important. Eastern Marxism had a concept of had a concept of imperialism, and that was Lenin that's why you're a Marxist Leninist,
right.
That is anti-capitalist but also anti-imperialist.
That's right.
Otherwise, in a period of imperialism, if you're not a Marxist Leninist, you're not a Marxist anymore.
Right, that's right. So yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm just going to say, to me, that's the most relevant point to what's going on today, which we will get to ultimately in a few weeks.
Yes, that is a key point. And today, right, so you have anti-fascist organizations that go and fight the KKK, and they should, but they do not respond to the United States attack on Syria. A country that's emerging, that a country that has fought for independence from France and European powers, has acquired independence and now is again under attack for colonization. So you go and fight South or wherever against fascism, but you don't fight imperialism. You're not a Marxist.
Right. That's right.
Plain as that, whatever you call yourself.
That's right.
So that's very important for us to discuss, for people to discuss, for us to discuss in future.
For sure.
In fact, I have notes in my outline saying just what we said. Trotsky, so this was more or less the fourth reason. We don't join the Soviet Union because it's a police state. And the proof for that Trotsky brings forth is the monstrous purges, in his words, in the USSR are the most convincing testimony of the fact that the people are against the Soviet system and want to eject the bureaucracy. Now, what he was saying was, I can tell you it's a police state because they had these monstrous purges. And these monstrous purges occurred, he implies, because the Soviet people rose up against the Soviet state. When in fact it was his gang...
Right.
The Trotskyists within the Soviet Union,
right,
that were sabotaging mines,
right,
and doing all sorts of disruption, including terrorism, killing Kirov, for example.
Yeah, that's right.
There was an attempt to subvert the state, and here Turkey says, you see those purges where he condemned all those innocent people? That's proof that the Soviet people are not with the Soviet government. And so we shouldn't support the Soviet Union because the people don't,
right,
because the Soviet people themselves don't.
That's his argument. Yep.
you know?
Yep.
So the Stalinist purges are proof of the fact that the bureaucracy has become a ruling class and the people want to overthrow it. So let's go with the people rather than the bureaucracy. Long, fifth reason. Oh, no, this is just my note.
It's okay.
On my comment on the fact that it resonates today. That Stalinism and fascism are the same, which we mentioned, and they are both totalitarian. This is the whole of Western propaganda today. This declaration in the EU Parliament to condemn totalitarianism,
yep.
Both fascism and communism, etc. Yeah, you were going to say.
No, that's right. There's just what's been in the media today, even a discussion among quote-unquote communists, quote-unquote anti-imperialists, etc. You know, Russia is that. There is no champion of the working class on the global stage. Russia is, you know, there's some red characteristics, but it is brown, red and brown at best. People that are arguing that fight imperialism by working in conjunction with or defending Russia, they're, you know, working in a red and brown coalition, whether they know it or not, because Russia is essentially fascist. Also, the administration of China and the, you know, the fact that there's a private sector that's a very substantial one there shows that its government also is red brown at best and perhaps overtly fascist. So the only place that we can go with these people is world revolution. Well, y'all have been saying that since like 1905. When are you going to start it so we can join it?
Yes, but and of course, you know, they concentrate what you were just saying, what they do with China. China is irrelevant, actually. Right. China is capitalist and imperialist. So this, again, you see the indifference by whatever we call left.
How is China
West,
imperialist,
you know, in the
though?
West, whatever it is that is left or Marxist or whatever they call them, they're not.
They're not, right.
They haven't studied Marxism.
Right.
So again, we have this blindness. Something really terrific is happening in China.
That's right.
But nobody looks at it. And if they do, they call it capitalist and imperialist, right, and dismiss it.
Yeah, especially
this
though, for me, here's the thing
between Western and Eastern Marxism.
The thing, to the point here, on the question of imperialism, they call it an imperialist country. A, it has no colonies. B, they say the imperialism rests on the fact that it's reaching out to the rest of the world to do business and trade and you know, economic relations, and to offer another route to development than that offered by imperialism. And that, of course, puts them on par with, you know, as just an alternate imperialist power with the existing imperialist structure, and therefore not worthy of consideration except for condemnation.
Except that they haven't read a word of Lenin. For them, they can't tell the difference between imperialism, an imperialist power, and a tin pot dictatorship.
That's
really
right, for sure. Right.
In other words, they don't know the features of the economic features that propel imperialism. For one, the overdevelopment of the nation, the full development of the nation, which then the nation doesn't yield any profits anymore.
Right.
So the capitalists have to go abroad.
Yep, they have to go
forward. Exploit and extract resources.
And then, of course, the history of it shows that these things happened sort of in uneven rates, that they kind of happened together and sort of orbit each other through the development process. But we have nothing like that in China. And there's nothing like that in Russia either.
Any
parts of Russia that are imperial, quote unquote, that, you know, those relations were settled like in the 15th century or earlier, and so that it's not really true. You've had one nation of people, more or less, with many nationalities, multi-plural national nation half a millennia, and China goes back millennia. Okay, we got to stop here because we're out of time. I guess we can go to Stalin's critique of this after we finish finish up Trotsky's allegations next week. So thank you very much, Luciana.
World Revolution is where we're going to begin next week.
Great. The good place to start.
Theory of World Revolution by Trotsky and the Critique of Stalin, by Stalin.
Very good. Okay, thank you. I'm looking forward to it. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.